This is Bronson Hermuth. I'm coming to you today from Hendersonville, Tennessee, and I have the honor to be sitting with the owner of the studio, in the studio, with Mr. Dick McVeigh. Dick, thank you for doing this.
My pleasure.
You've had such an incredible career, so many different facets of the industry, but when I was looking at your bio and researching you for this interview, your mom and dad played.
Yeah. Well, my dad was a guitar player, and my uncle played instruments. I had several uncles who played instruments, and of course, we grew up in the mountains of Appalachia, where entertainment was basically you entertained yourself, or you didn't have any entertainment. Obviously, none of the frills that we have today are available, or were available. So, you know, there were little square dances. They would have square dances here and there. But my dad played guitar, and had an uncle who played banjo, and so they would get together and do these square dance things. And then later on, my mom and my dad and another uncle put together a gospel trio, and they would sing at local churches and that kind of thing. But I can remember them rehearsing and singing those old hymns. It was a great time.
How old were you when you actually picked up the guitar yourself?
Well, my dad attempted to teach me to play around the age of 10 or 11. And when the Beatles came along, and I was 15 at the time. I mean, what a perfect time to be alive in the world.
Yeah.
The Beatles came along, and I saw all these girls screaming at the Beatles. And, of course, I was kind of a shy guy in high school. And I thought, you know what? I might be able to talk to a girl. A girl might talk to me, you know, if I can play the guitar. So I went back to my dad, and he showed me, you know, he wasn't a great guitarist, but he showed me the basics. And then I bought a book, a chord book, and taught myself the rest. And then as the Beatles music progressed and got more and more difficult, I couldn't get my fingers to do all of those things. And I'm teaching myself, which is the worst thing in the world you can do, because I taught myself all these bad habits, but I could never quite get all of the fingering right on some of these really difficult chords that the Beatles were throwing in their music, and as bad as I wanted to play it, it was tough for me. But I put a little band together when I was 15, and I played guitar for probably 5 years.
Was it Rondo?
Rondos.
Rondos. Rondos. Yeah. That was a fine-looking picture, too.
Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful shot. I bet we all wish we could go back and change all those, get rid of all those pictures.
How old were you? Do you remember when you actually, with that, the first time you got paid to play?
I was 15.
15.
Yeah. My sister was a school teacher, and she was 9 years older than I was, and she taught junior high school. And so they had a little dance at the junior high school, and she asked me if we would come up and play. We'd been practicing on the front porch, and it was summertime, and as fall came along, they had a fall dance, and so we put it together and went up and did the dance and got $5 or something. It was ridiculous, but you know, it was a chance to play.
That's what I got the other night downtown. $5. So you came to Nashville based on a letter that you wrote.
I was actually in the late 70s. I put together a show band because that was kind of the trend at the time. Is you had a, you know, a show band. You didn't just go in and play cover songs, but you actually did a show, and there was energy, and so I put this show together, and we played it around locally, and it was going pretty well. And so I called a booking agent out of Huntington, West Virginia, and he came up to Beckley and took a look at us, and he said, "Yeah, I think I can put this on the road." So he put us on the road, and one of our stops was here in Nashville. And one of the guys who came, as the show bands would come through Beckley from all over the country, they would, you know, run that Ramada Inn circuit and the Holiday Inn circuit. There was a Ramada Inn in Beckley, and one of the show bands that came through was from Nashville, and there was a guy playing bass named John Frost, who later went on to be one of the Four Guys. Well, by the time I got to Nashville, you know, John said, "If you ever come to Nashville, call me." Well, I didn't know he was playing with the Four Guys. I didn't know he was on the Opry or anything, so we were playing the Holiday Inn at Briley Parkway. That was our show band gig for that 3-week period. So I called John, and he said, "Hey, I'm playing on the Opry." And I was like, "Wow, great." He says, "You need to come out." So he invited me, and I started going backstage and started meeting people. But we moved on with the band, continued to work the road. And I started thinking. I was 30 years old at that point. And I thought, you know what? If there's any place for longevity in music, it's going to be in Nashville, in country music. So I called John up and I said, you know, I think I'm ready to maybe come to Nashville and try and see what I can do. And he said, well, come on, I'll help you. You know, help you do whatever we can do. So there were three people from my hometown that were doing fairly well here. Russ Hicks, the steel guitar player, Charlie McCoy, and little Jimmy Dickens. I was a safety inspector at a coal mine in the 70s. I had worked with little Jimmy Dickens' half-brother. So when I sat down and wrote his letter, I told him that I said, you know, I worked with your half-brother, Frank Acord, in the mines, but I've been playing music for the last 3 or 4 years on the road, and I'm here in Nashville now, and I'm looking for a job. Well, lo and behold, the day the letter got there, he was in California, and his bass player and drummer, he had caught him doing something they shouldn't have been doing, and he fired him on the spot. So the letter got to his wife, and she's reading it to Jim over the phone, and he says, hire him. So
that's a great story.
So they hired me.
And so we missed that little transition, though. So by now you were playing bass guitar.
Yes.
You switched over to play the bass. Mm-hmm. Couldn't find a bass player.
Well, actually, I went to college, and I started focusing more on my real career, which was mortuary science. So I got a degree in mortuary science. I went to the same college as John Conley, and so I got that degree, and that evolved into me, because the funeral homes had ambulance service, I got my EMT license, and became an EMT instructor, and then they hired me as a safety inspector at a coal mine, because it became a law that you had to have an EMT on each site. Mm. So they did double duty with me. I was their EMT, but I also did other things for them as far as safety goes, and so I did that for several years.
Now you're in Nashville, and the first time that I was aware of you was with your musician referral service.
Mm-hmm.
You started that, what, 83?
86.
86. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I was working with little Jimmy Dickens in 83, and Tom Holland was the drummer. And Tom, everybody would call Tom when they needed a musician. And he kept saying, when we were on the road in 83, he kept saying, you know, I wish somebody would start a referral service. I wish somebody would. So 86 rolls around, and I'm thinking the same thing, you know. And so I just started putting out a list to the music stores, just friends of mine who played, people that I knew who were would be available for sub work or even for road work. And I started distributing that list to the music stores. And then gradually started going to booking agents. We started going to managers, started going to artists direct. Then we started going to the theaters in Branson. And it just kind of, in the late 80s and up through the mid 90s, it was a very popular way to find musicians. And, you know, became worldwide. I even placed musicians with Disney in Paris. I mean, that's how it spread. So, and I still continue to do it. It's not what it was in the late 80s and early 90s, because the work's not what it was in the late 80s and early 90s. And I've told people, even when people call me today about it, I say, you know, this never takes the place of making friends with somebody and doing it the political way, because that's the way most people get hired. Always has been.
So is that pretty much the point in your career where you slid over to the other side of the desk and started working in the industry side?
No, I'll tell you how it all started. When I was 15, going back to that,
right?
I wanted to play so bad that I would go out and book the gigs. I would put up the posters. I did all the business side of the business in order to play. And I didn't know it at the time how it was going to affect me later on. But I had a really good working knowledge of every aspect of the business by the time I was 18 or 19 years old. I pretty much had figured out what not to do, at
yeah.
least, you know, by actually being hands-on and doing it. The other musicians, all they wanted to do was meet me somewhere on Friday evening and go play. They didn't have any interest in trying to book a gig. I was 15. I had to figure out a way to get me there. I couldn't drive, so my sister, you know, and my brother-in-law, they would haul us around, and the drummer was old enough, he had a car, and so we would get to and from the local gigs. But we started there at home, and then we would play in the next county, and then it became the next state. And you know, as our popularity grew, obviously the more weight was on me to continue to, and I tried to build the act, you know, which I was pretty successful at it, considering, you know, I was a teenager. So that's all translated to what I'm doing today.